Texas Talking Owl. What was that you said? Texas Talking Owl. Gonna hoop upside your head. Texas Talking.
Hi, and welcome to the Tribcast. This is State Representative Drew Springer. When I'm driving through the 22 counties of House District 68, I take comfort in knowing wherever I stop to shop, I can get a plastic bag to carry my purchases. And now, here's your host.
Thank you. This is reporter Reeve Hamilton here with the Tribcast for the third week of September. Thank you for that Austin Bag Band reference. I'm sure one man that was very impressed with it is executive editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
Threw you for a loop there.
Did you see what he did there? He zigged.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought he was going to zag.
CEO and editor-in-chief Evan Smith is also here.
I actually am irritated by the bag ban.
What? I love the bag ban.
I thought he was mentioning plastic bags because he was throwing up over the Tribcast, but that's just me.
That's usually where those intros end up.
Exactly.
Vomiting over the Tribcast.
You also heard the voice of reporter Becca Aronson.
Hello.
Pro bag ban. Bag ban advocate.
Bag ban Becca.
I don't like the bag ban.
You don't carry your Whole Food and your Central Market bags in the back of your car.
It's not that I don't mind that. No, I do, but I forget them sometimes. And the worst problem is actually not the supermarkets. Is you go into a restaurant to take food out at the lunch hour, for instance.
But they're not.
And they say,
most people just
they say, we're not going to give you a bag. You have to pay 16 cents if you want to have a bag to carry your sandwich.
But the restaurants aren't included in the bag ban. They're lying.
Then someone should tell Annie's on Congress.
They should.
I should tweet out the phone number. They make me pay 16 cents for a bag.
This is not one of our topics for this week. By the way. We should warn listeners that this whole episode is embargoed until next week.
Yes, so, until 9 a.m. tomorrow.
So but please, you can tweet about it.
Until that jerk Michael Lee breaks the embargo.
Yeah, you can tweet about it using the hashtag Tribcast, but other than that, please don't tell anyone.
The embargo.
Of course, we are referring to what, Becca?
He's zigging again.
He's doing it again.
Wendy Davis's non-announcement that she is going to announce something. Weeks from now.
They sure got a lot of attention for a nothing burger.
What is she announcing?
Well, let's back up.
I just saved money by switching to Geico? What's she announcing?
Well, we can ask her at Tribune Festival.
I stayed at the Holiday Inn Express. I will be asking her. In fact, at Tribune Festival, I'm going to sit there and say, we're waiting 4 days. I'm not letting anybody
leave. It'll be a green lizard in pink shoes. And
whatever day it is, I don't care. We're going to wait until October 3rd until you announce.
Okay, can we go back a little bit?
No.
Last night, which was Tuesday night, members of the media got an email from the Wendy Davis campaign that said,
just make those wavy lines, flashback.
That said that she would be announcing that she is going to announce on October 3rd what she is going to do.
But the announcement of the announcement was embargoed.
Say announce again.
But you could not announce the announcement of the announcement until 9 a.m. today. Unfortunately, that plan didn't work out. And do we think this was a failure on the campaign's part or the media's
Ross
part?
Ross thinks they're crazy like a fox.
It doesn't matter. I think they screwed up, but I also think they learned something really important here. I think, you know, they told everybody, you can't tell everybody, don't tell anybody something, and because they start twittering. They told not only the press to embargo this, they told supporters. They told apparently the Democratic Party. They told some of their donors. Tomorrow morning, Wendy is going to announce that on October 3rd, she is going to announce what we can't tell you yet, right? So this is supposed to be a story. It's barely a tweet. And I think
I completely disagree with you.
Well,
it is such a tweet.
Yeah, but although this is our longstanding
This is exactly what
news.
I'm talking about. Right, she got everybody revved up.
I thought it was totally news.
She's like the iPhone 6 all of a sudden.
See, I disagree with Ross for a different reason. I don't think she did get everybody revved up. I think it sort of was like letting the air out of the balloon a little too slowly, including waiting for October 3rd.
I disagree with you also. She did get
everybody tweeted all night last night, and then all the media outlets, including this one, have stories this morning.
The worst part was
for her like a champ.
That the instructions were don't talk about this, but then it came out that the instructions were actually you can tweet about it, but you can't write about it.
Right.
What? Excuse me? Except to Ross's point, though, they kind of got something out of it times 10, right? The Washington Post has a story today saying Wendy Davis is going to announce on October 3rd. Every news organization in Texas stampeded toward writing about. I mean, this is
we're
they
here
got
talking about it.
Huge press.
World's most famous air guitar player,
right?
I mean, you know, it's barely a thing.
But it's a thing. It's much more.
We disagree on that.
Yeah, it's a thing.
So the announcement that she's probably going to run for governor came at a Freedom of Information Foundation luncheon in Austin in August. I'm going to be announcing in 2 weeks.
Our last disagreement, father,
a couple of weeks.
We've already fought about that.
And then before. Her father got sick and ultimately died, and that put off the announcement. But this is the pending situation with Wendy Davis. They've managed to turn it into 4 or 5 stories, and now 6.
But can you will that energy sustain? And is she not running the risk of getting, like, there are other people waiting in the wings to get in and start campaigning?
Do we get
and
announcement
money.
Fatigue?
Yeah. I already have announcement fatigue.
No.
You have fatigue about everything.
They'll come out next week.
I have Evan Smith fatigue. That is for sure.
Get in line, buddy.
The announcements will start. You know, the filing period, I got to correct something I said last week. The filing period is November 9th to December 9th. It had been in previous years, December to early January, but the filing period for candidates this year is November 9th to December 9th. So Davis will come out on October 4th and say, if she says anything other than I'm running for governor, I'll be stunned.
Oh, my God. She's totally running.
So she's going to say I'm running for governor. Then we'll see Democrats either fall in line into the other offices or not, which is, you know, kind of interesting. And then by November 9th, people will start filing, and we'll have full tickets by December 9th. So, you know, it's kind of the races that generally start around Labor Day are now finally getting going.
The reason that this is significant is it's not Farouk Shami saying, I'm going to announce on October 3rd.
No, because he's waiting to see what Wendy Davis does.
Yes. The reason it's significant is that for the first time in 20 years, the Democrats will have a candidate, if she does indeed run, who will register more than a flat line on the monitor.
Right, but you can say that how many times? This is the fifth time they've said exactly that. For the first time in 20 years.
And how much is it outside of Texas that she's really getting all of this attention?
A lot, and it's an excellent point because her fundraising will be greater than the combined fundraising of the last three gubernatorial candidates in places like San Francisco and New York and Washington, which Dave Carney and team will run against her.
She has a lot
they don't
money.
Vote.
Now we're back to my point. This is working for them. Like, I mean, they may have screwed up. And I think they probably did screw up last night, you know, but it's working.
So I'm curious to see who her team is.
If they moved it to October 5th, then the announcement, would we have another announcement?
Maybe so. Is there going to –
that'd be a big story.
Kind of, sort of. Is there going to be – it depends on this embargo. Is there going to be the same team in place for this campaign as has been the team around her efforts so far?
Well, can you put together a Democratic team that has won statewide – has a history of winning statewide candidates?
You can. They're all my age, and they haven't run a campaign that won statewide since, you know, the day. But I'm not sure that's the team you'd put together. The question here is whether the people who got her to the Senate in a district that she wasn't supposed to win in are the same people who ought to run a statewide campaign. This is, you know, Matt Engel, J.D. Engel, you know, a bunch of people who have a particular expertise at Southern Tarrant and Southern Dallas County races, kind of the old Marty Frost machine and their progeny. And they've won some House races, and they've done a fairly good job. They haven't run a statewide campaign in a long time. They certainly haven't won a successful one.
Or are there a new generation of people who have been off the field,
right?
The Jason Johnsons and the John Drogans and that John McClellan's, the people who ran the Cruz
Democratic
campaign
side, right.
On the Democratic side. Is there a bench that we're just not seeing?
Like Teresa Guerra.
Well, there's been no opportunity for the bench to be activated.
They've run some successful district campaigns in the House and in the Senate.
Or is there an effort to nationalize this election?
Right.
And does the modern day equivalent of James Carville and Paul Begala, right, or does the actual James Carville and Paul Begala, or people of that caliber, right, come in and say Wendy Davis is lightning in a bottle? An opportunity to embarrass the Republicans in Texas. They still hate Rick Perry. Those Democrats do. They want to come in. They figure they're going to hurt Rick Perry. They're going to hurt Greg Abbott. They're going to build her brand. They're going to help the battleground Texas people kind of get traction here by raising the voter turnout, right, levels, and by raising the Democratic ceiling from the last couple cycles. And so they import the big dogs who come in. I mean, I'm not sure that's at all successful, but that's a possibility.
Some of that depends on the money. If I'm contributing a lot of money to the Wendy Davis campaign, I'm either in Texas or not in Texas, I say, you know, okay, so what am I investing in? Let me see the business plan. Who are these guys? And you know, those conversations are going on. So if you're, you know, one of those donors, you have some say in, you know, I want to see a team that can do X, Y, Z or that can demonstrate this or that. I think that conversation's underway.
David Plouffe comes in. Is the response from Democrats here, great, the cavalry's arrived, and is the response from Republicans, great, Obama's guy is here, we now tie Davis to Obama?
Well, yeah, if it's David Plouffe, that's exactly what they do. Right. Every Republican in the state, all the way down to city council, is running against the president.
That's true.
It's a midterm election. He's unpopular in Texas. This is easy. Politics 101. So, you know, I don't think that really enters into it so much as, you know, if you were going to prosecute a successful campaign in Texas as a Democrat, who can do this? And I think the question is sort of a hanging question because nobody's done it for so long. There's not an easy answer to that.
Who ran the Richards campaign, the last successful? Right. Who was elected in 94 for the Democrats? We always say that the last statewide Democrat elected was
Bob Bullock was elected
in 94, and right. And Dan Morales was elected in 94.
Dan Morales, John Sharp.
So who ran those campaigns?
That's when McKinnon was a Democrat.
That's how long ago it was. Right. Back in the Pleistocene age.
Bullock's guys were McKinnon and Matt Dowd, you know, then turned and—
Number of Democrats in that group, zero today.
Right.
Right?
Right. So, I mean, everybody moved on. And you know, even if the Democrats had been winning in Texas all this time, we would have changed generations of consultants by now. We'd have a new generation. You know, they were the young guys in the 80s. And then, you know, you get replaced. So the question here is whether there's anybody who is in the state who knows how to do this, or if there's anybody from out of the state who can bring skills they learned elsewhere and make this work in Texas. And, you know,
interestingly, people who ran successful statewide campaigns in other states in an adverse environment.
Right.
People who ran Joe Donnelly's campaign in Indiana for the Senate, or ran Claire McCaskill's campaign in Missouri this last time for the Senate,
right.
Or ran John Hickenlooper's campaign for governor in Colorado, some combination of people who might have worked on those.
But so we have some recent experience with this. You know, Kay Hutchison tried to run a statewide campaign in Texas with a bunch of people from other states.
She imported people from out of town. Right. That was an issue in the race.
Right.
But there's not just Wendy Davis running, of course. What about the other Democratic candidates? Do they have to worry about who their teams are? And do they have to wait? Now that Wendy Davis has announced that she is going to announce on October 3rd, do they have to wait to announce their plans to see what her plan is? Or can they go ahead and get in the race? Like, obviously, Leticia Vanderpoot is positioning herself to run for something.
She's talking about it. She's got some family issues that are going to keep her tangled up for at least a week to 10 days. And so any announcement she makes, I think, probably will come after Wendy's announcement. She told me that she needs to talk to her family first, and they've had some family illnesses and some deaths in the family that they need to deal with. So I think she waits a little bit. There haven't been a lot of names mentioned for Attorney General. Carlos Uresti, who's a state senator from San Antonio, has talked to some people about it.
I hadn't heard that, really.
You know, there's some names getting kicked around, and the question is,
does he have a 4-year term?
I think that's right.
See, part of this, of course, is that Vanderpoot has a 4-year term, so there's no risk in her running
right.
for
so if you lose
governor.
If you lose a statewide race,
still
you're still
has a
senator.
Senate seat.
Right.
But although, instantly, as Ross pointed out to me yesterday, the challenge for her with a 4-year term is she runs for lieutenant governor and she loses to the guy who's going to be her boss.
Right.
And suddenly she's the vice chairwoman of the Kiss My Butt Committee in the next legislative session.
Well, as you know, her current committee that she chairs is apparently not important.
Unimportant.
According to Lieutenant Governor David Dewhurst.
Well, yeah, he was at a forum in Houston. Patty Hart covered this and did a really nice job for the Houston Chronicle. Apparently Dan Patrick said, you know, I'll tell you one thing.
And another thing.
If I'm the lieutenant governor, there won't be a bunch of Democrats chairing committees. And Dewhurst's reply to that was, essentially, you know, there are 17 committees in the Senate, and only 5 of them are run by Democrats, and none of those are important.
It's not your best Dewhurst impression.
Well, no, it's not. The three things wrong with that is there's actually 18 committees. There's 6 headed by Democrats. And
which committee did he forget?
Yeah, exactly.
The really unimportant.
Well, right. The committees, you know, some of them are, you know, sort of junker committees. But, you know, you're talking to the Republicans on those committees as well as the Democrats. And the
junker committees?
Yeah, they're not the greatest committees.
Like the Buick, the 88 Buick with an exhaust problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of committee?
Yeah, the 73.
Which is that exactly?
The 73 Datsun.
But the one that Vanderpoot chairs is the
Veterans Affairs and Military Installations. Pardon me, right, yeah.
John Whitmire chairs criminal justice. Jurisprudence is in this bunch.
Oh, I'm sure Whitmire was fine with that.
Yeah, I'm sure his Cheerios are still all over the wall.
No problem. It's
breakfast
fine.
Room.
He loved it. No, it's hilarious.
Oops.
I mean, I don't you feel bad for the lieutenant governor at the moment on this stuff? I do.
I think he's one of our most prolific content providers.
He is. David Dewhurst, Christmas every day.
Exactly.
I agree.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Yeah. Let's talk about other Republicans that are running for things, specifically Tom Paakin, since I haven't talked to him this week.
It was really fun to talk to Tom Paakin, but I will say that for—
Who's Tom Paakin?
Tom Paakin is the former chairman of the Texas Workforce Commission, former Reagan administration White House staffer.
Vista former, program, right.
Was it, I thought it was Action. Well, I mean, one of those, one right. of those acronym programs. And then he was also chairman of the Texas Republican Party in the mid-'80s at a time when he says the party— kind of came back or grew. It's his claim is that in his time as chairman, the party revived. He was appointed by Rick Perry in 2008 to the Workforce Commission. He was appointed chairman of the Workforce Commission. He served as chairman until 2012. He served as a member of the commission until 2013. Back in 2006, when he had the opportunity to join a lot of other Republicans in stampeding. No, in 2010, pardon me, when he had a chance to stampede toward Kay Bailey Hutchison as an alternative to Rick Perry, he supported Rick Perry in that race. But he's now singing a different tune. He has issues with Rick Perry's time as governor, and he has issues with Greg Abbott as a candidate. And so he's entered this the race for governor as a Republican. He is daring to challenge Greg Abbott for governor. And, you know, he's a very conservative guy. You'd think that there would not be significant differences in a Republican primary between two self-described conservatives. They're all pro-life. They're all this. They're all that. They differ on some things.
They're making kind of a, you know, it's interesting. You know, Paakin's would ordinarily be like the insurrectionist candidate, except he was part of the Perry administration. Yeah. And he argues that the party ought to return sort of to the Reagan years. So you've kind of got the current traditionalist, you know, in Perry and Abbott.
And Abbott.
Running against, you know, he's running against him not as, you know, an outsider, but as an insider from a previous era.
I don't think Greg Abbott is a real conservative. In fact, he even said, I think Greg Abbott is a fraud.
Right.
Really? How far do you have to go to find people who think that Greg Abbott is not conservative? I mean,
it's a very long con.
He's challenging quite the commonly held perception there that Abbott is adequately conservative. So there were four principal differences that he named the other day in the conversation we had at the Austin Club. One was Abbott believes that the state system of financing public education is constitutional. Paakin thinks it's unconstitutional. He wants to see a swap out of the property tax for an increase in the sales tax.
Right.
Revenue neutral, he says, although, as I said to him the other day, you know, all anybody on the Republican side is going to hear is blah, 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 increased taxes, right. Blah, blah, right? Abbott is opposed to term limits. Paakin is for them. I can't think of a campaign that's ever been won on that issue.
Right.
Abbott is against the American Airlines US Air merger. Paakin is for it on the grounds that it would create jobs for Texas, and he thinks
there
that
goes Tom Paakin siding with Wendy Davis again.
That's an interesting fight right. up in Dallas
Abbott
Fort Worth.
Abbott has leapt into the arms of Eric Holder, according to Paakin.
That's an interesting fight up in right. Dallas Fort Worth. I mean, on one side you've got the state, you know, Abbott arguing that and actually arguing alongside the Justice Department of the Obama administration that this is anti-competitive and will lead to higher fares. And then you've got sort of the on-the-ground version of this is, you know, wait a minute, if you don't allow this merger, you're going to cost us a bunch of jobs. So
right. So that's one right. difference.
That was kind of interesting.
Right. And then Abbott people will frame it as, you know, is he like for the law or against the law, right?
I mean, this is a guy who sued the federal government every single day for the last 10 years.
I get up in the morning, I sue the Obama administration. I go.
It's hard to paint him like, as an Obama Democrat. But anyway, so Paakin's going to make the difference on that issue, a big issue in the campaign. And then the last thing he says is crony capitalism. And he cites specifically Abbott's service on the CPRIT board. Right. He claims Abbott never attended any of the meetings, but then he ended up taking $3 million from people who received grants from CPRIT, I believe. And, you know, That crony capitalism charge was attempted to be leveled against Perry by both Hutchison and White in the last campaign, got no traction at all.
Yeah, his best argument at the moment may be that this argument that, you know, Abbott would be a continuation of the Perry administration, aren't we tired of that? And I don't know if he could sell that. I don't know if he's got—
He apparently told the Dallas Morning News after the interview with me on the same day that he thinks that Davis can beat Abbott.
Had a 40% chance of beating Abbott, I guess.
Yeah.
When the weathermen say 40%, it's almost assuredly going to rain.
Somewhere.
You know, Paakin would run in the fall competitively against Davis because this is a state in which, as long as you have an R next to your name, that's dispositive.
Right.
I just don't think that. I mean, the suggestion that somehow Davis is going to beat Abbott because, as Paakin says, Abbott is an unauthentic or inauthentic conservative seems like a stretch to me.
So do you think what role does he play in the race? Is there any reason for him to be running, or is it?
Well, I mean, if he gets any traction at all, he can change the issue set that they're talking about. I mean, you know, it may change the state's position or Abbott's position on American Airlines. It may change, you know, I mean, there's a million things like that.
And if Abbott has a macaca moment, then Pawkin is there to be the beneficiary. He's the one standing there as the alternative. I mean, the likelihood of Abbott, who's so cautious anyway, saying anything at all that would get him into trouble.
And as much name recognition as Abbott has in the state, I know plenty of people that still don't know who he is.
Right. They love Pawkin.
Well, they might not know who either Republican candidates are.
Well, right.
But they might know who Wendy Davis
is. Abbott's run successfully statewide 5 times.
Right.
I mean, that's the thing. He's clearly a well-known quantity.
Right, now, the only charismatic candidate in the governor's race is Wendy Davis.
And she's not even in.
But, right. She's in it. There'll be an announcement. We can't say that yet.
Ross, October 3rd.
Is living in the future.
You know, and the question for Abbott and Pawkin is just like Becca says. I mean, you know, which of these guys is going to rise to the level that voters know who they are and know what they're about? And then if you look at their bank accounts, it's clear that Pawkin is miles and miles and miles and miles ahead in that. He's got 23 or 24 million dollars.
You mean Abbott?
I'm sorry. He's got 23 or 24
million. Pawkin, by the way, is going to edit out that part of the podcast and say, it's awesome. I have $24 million. Greatest thing that ever happened.
Pawkin has less than a million. He doesn't have enough money to get in front of enough voters to tell them, here's my name and here's what I'm about.
You don't think Trib Live did that?
Maybe it will.
I could name all the people in the room.
But
he might have persuaded that.
It does seem like the only chance for a macaca moment, as you said, for Abbott is if he tweets something poorly. Twitter seems to be the Achilles heel of that campaign.
He's now apologized, in essence, twice.
Right.
Well, but then Dave Carney went off and did his Wendy Davis is too stupid to be governor tweet.
That's the second one.
Oh.
Right. The first one was retard Barbie, right?
Right.
Again, said by somebody else. I mean, you wrote a great story at the time talking about how Twitter was this third rail for a lot of politicians, and that's continued to be proven.
Right. I'm all thumbs.
Oh, my God.
Let's not go too far down that rabbit hole. Let's try to throw some policy into this thing if we can. That's why Becca's here. Can you give us an update on the state's approach to healthcare?
Yeah, so Perry basically laid out some cards on the table this week saying what he's going to do in response to federal health reform. I mean, of course, we know he's against Medicaid expansion. We know he's against the exchanges. But now we know what he's going to do about it. He's basically said we're going to pursue a block grant, which has been an idea that's been up in the air for a long time that we talked about in the session, but everyone just said, no way, not under the Obama administration, we're not going to get it. So we didn't actually go for it. And now he's saying, well, let's fight for it, even, you know, if it's just for politics' sake.
Is there legislation that didn't get passed that would have made that process easier? Or is there legislation that was passed that would make that process easier?
Well, we've done it in the past. We've pursued legislation. I mean, he can basically tell the state agency, the Health and Human Services Commission, we want to go for this waiver, and they'll go for it. The other thing that he did this week is he told the Department of Insurance that he wants to set up regulations for the Federal Navigator Program. And those are the people that we've received $11 million from the feds to train to help people enroll and find private coverage through the health insurance exchange.
So these are federal employees that he wants the state to regulate, or how does this
yes.
work?
Yes, and other states have also tried to do this and set up laws to regulate the navigators, basically because, you know, we're in charge of our own insurance system. It's a state-regulated thing, so we can do some of the things that he wanted to do. Some of the things are going to be forbidden under federal law that he's requested, so there's going to be a conflict there. You know, he's raised privacy concerns. So did the legislature. They passed a bill authorizing the TDI to
Texas Department of Insurance.
Yeah, the Texas Department of Insurance to regulate the navigators. So the legislature has approved this move. And
the navigators, this is like your Orbitz style guide through the insurance process.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Except it's a little bit more complicated than Travelocity or Orbitz because
it's more
you
like
have
kayak.com.
Because you have to put your tax information in there. And right. So they're handling your social security numbers. You have to estimate how much money you think you're going to make in order to figure out if you're going to be eligible for subsidies. And so a lot of conservatives, including Greg Abbott, who also sent a letter to the feds on this, have said they don't undergo enough training to really make sure that people's private information is secure. And so we want the state to give them an extra 40 hours of training on top of the 20 hours the feds are giving them.
Is that based
on? We want them to take a test, and we want to have a more rigorous process, and we want to have more oversight and actually what they're doing.
Are there assertions that they don't receive enough training to know how to use private information based on anything other than sort of a desire to add this training? I mean, it seems to me like the state, we've had a number of private information leaks from our state government come out in the last few years.
Right. And I mean, there's already a Medicare program that's exactly like this, that we've never raised any issues
about. Why'd they wait so long to set up the navigators, and why did the state wait so long to start raising questions about it and ask for the waiver and all of this? I mean, this thing's upon us. This you know, the start of this program is upon us. We've known it was going to be upon us for at least 2 years.
You know, I think that they held back on the navigator thing.
They're waiting to see what Wendy Davis was going to say.
Well, okay, so there's a six-month enrollment period that starts October 1st and goes to March 31st.
Right.
But on January 1st, you can actually start buying the plans. And so they want to get these new regulations. Perry and his office want to get the new regulations for the navigators in effect by January 1st. So right now, all of these groups are training their navigators, but if come January 1st, right when they can actually start helping people really purchase the plans, they get this huge roadblock. Oh, wait, all of you guys need to have 40 extra hours of training and you have to pass a certification test. Like, you're really going to mess up their system, you know, and you can't give them enough time to prepare for it if you do it right at the very end.
So is this more... How big is the political element of this?
It's huge. Plan? It's a huge political element.
So how much of this is make sure this works right, and how much of this is make sure this doesn't work? I mean, do you have a sense of that? It's probably not a fair question, but
it's not really a fair question because the motivations obviously behind what they're saying of we're going to protect people's privacy. Those are, you know, legitimate concerns to a certain extent, but the timing of it and the extent of what he's requested the agency to do. In terms of how rigorous these new regulations are going to be, makes it pretty clear that this is a political move.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, there are some people in the state that still don't have insurance.
Oh, yeah. We once again ranked that the highest for uninsured people.
We're the highest in number and percentage, right?
Yeah. No, I think California has a little bit more number-wise, but because their population is so much bigger than ours.
Right.
But I mean, I was looking at the numbers today that the census put out with the American Community Survey, and we have the most children under 138% of the poverty line that don't have insurance. We have the highest percent of adults under 138% of the poverty line that don't have health insurance, and that's 55% compared to the average in most states is 36% of the really poor. And these are all the people that would have qualified for Medicaid if we had expanded the program under the Affordable Care Act. So this is a serious problem that Texas has to do something about. And the block grant that Perry has suggested, you know, could do a lot of good things to reform our Medicaid program. It could, you know, be a disaster. Who knows? I can't predict that, but at the same time, it's not going to do anything for these people that still don't have insurance.
Is the waiver that they're talking about similar to the waivers that they sought and didn't get under the Bush administration? Is it basically the same set of ideas, or is this morphed into a completely different thing now?
I don't know how different it is from that. The block grant is basically we're going to get a lump amount of money so that we can do whatever we want with our Medicaid program. And what they say they want to do is they want to put some cost-sharing elements in there so that we can have personal responsibility. And that means deductibles, maybe premiums, maybe just some out-of-pocket costs, whether it's paying $1 or $5 to go see the doctor, just so people feel like it's a, you know, important.
Right.
Is there anything that Texas could have or should have done to bring down its percentage of uninsured people? Because it seems like if you're giving someone a block grant of money to improve their insurance program, and they seem to be among the states that is sort of least likely to sort of with the least know-how when it comes to getting people insured. Is that at all a problem?
Well, I think the Perry administration is saying, you know, if you'll let us run our own program, it'll be more efficient. We'll cover more people with the same amount or less money. You know, test it. Let's try it. So far, the federal government has said, no, we don't want to do that. You know, I guess we're asking again. That's kind of why I was asking.
On a political level, it's saying, you know, so many people in America are unhappy with federal health reform. You're forcing them to purchase insurance. Let us show you what the states can do because we can do it better. Right. And that's always been Texas, and it's always been Perry's angle on all of this. And it's just been, you know, he hasn't actually put it out on the table in the way by saying that we're actually going to go for it. He's just kind of, it's been rhetoric so far. And now it's going to turn into a policy battle.
Or a laboratory of democracy.
There you go.
Right. I meant the podcast.
Well, there you go.
Evan was going to do a pitch for the Texas Tribune Festival, but he stepped out.
And then he left.
Yeah.
So the Texas Tribune Festival is coming up. Evan knows all the prices and stuff, and so does our website, which will save you. I think you can get in if you're hearing this probably on Wednesday afternoon. We're putting this up this afternoon, Wednesday afternoon or Thursday. Mm-hmm. If you buy a ticket before the end of the day Friday, I think it's cheaper than if you buy it on Saturday. So hurry.
And it's worth it no matter what.
That's right.
It's worth it either way. That's exactly right.
Can you hear
right.
us talk more about the, healthcare?
The festival's a week away. It's the last weekend of the month. Ted Cruz on Friday, a whole bunch of individual and panel conversations through the day on Saturday. It's all here in Austin.
What are you guys doing?
I'm going to interview David Dewhurst on stage for an hour and then Greg Abbott on stage for an hour. That ought to be fun.
I'm going to be talking about implementing healthcare reform and Medicaid expansion. So more on what we've been talking about today.
A little preview. I'm talking to the Attorney General candidates and a conversation with Senator Kirk Watson and Wallace Hall, who is the first non-elected individual to be have impeachment proceedings considered against him in the state's history.
Right. That ought to be a lot of fun. So Reeve Hamilton with Fight Club. That'll be great.
And then we're also having a live Tribcast on the Sunday after the festival's over at the KUT studios. So you can email tribcast@texastribune.org if you want more information on that or if you have questions or comments about anything and everything. I think, is that enough of a pitch? Are you guys convinced? Come to the festival?
Yeah, go look at our website. There's a bunch of stuff on it.
The 27th to the 29th.
You can see the agendas and the prices and all of that kind of stuff. It ought to be pretty great.
If you're lucky, you might even get to see Shiny Ribs, who does the music for our podcast here.
And find out if they really are shiny.
On behalf of Becca, Ross, and Todd, and Evan in absentia, this is Reeve. Thanks for listening.
Texas talking. Texas talking.
Yes. What does a girl have to do to have her voice heard in the podcast?